Okay, Rabbosai. So after wishing everyone good morning, Boker Tov, we're on Daf Yud. And we started yesterday, let's start again, the Sugya of Makas, right? The Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin records Machlokas Shina Tanakama and Rabbi Yishmael. Tanakama says that all you need for a Beis Din of Makas in order to establish that this criminal is chai of 39 malchus, all you need is 3 judges. And the Rabbi Shmuel is going to argue, no, you need 23 judges. And Rabbi Shmuel seems to be impressed with the possibility that you start with malchus and you end with misa. There's some sort of relationship between malchus and misa. So the Gemara asks, on daf yunam and aleph, mino hani mili. And that you'll see approximately halfway through the Amud, and the first 2 words in the line are Mino Hani Mili. Now I'm just going to test you here, if you don't mind. What is the premise that always underlies a question of Mino Hani Mili?
It's not from Svarah.
What?
It's not from Svarah.
Exactly. Exactly. Very well said. That if we only had human logic, then we would not derive this conclusion. Hence, Minani Mili. What is the source in the Torah for this for lowering the requirement of judges to the bottom level in the case of Malchus of 3 judges? And this really touches on the question, which is a fundamental question, not in this Masechta, but in Masechta Ksubis, which punishment is more severe, Malchus or Mammon? You know, you can imagine a situation if you have, you know, the following seesaw. You have a very high Mammon with very low Malchus. Like, for example, let's say you would have a monetary loss of significant sum, and the Malchus is not so painful because he's a very strong fellow. You know, he's like a... What are those Asian, you know, those guys, you know, where
sumo
you could
wrestlers.
What do they call them? They,
sumo
wrestlers. You know, you could hit them on the back or the chest with a steel pole and they wouldn't flinch. You know, say so for him. So that, but so that's a sugya in Masechta Ksubis. So if we assume that a person would rather suffer mammon then Malchus, you know, if it's a very hefty sum of money, then the Gemara could have had a kalva chomer here. If Mammon, which is more chomer, and all you require is how many judges, 3 judges, and how much more so in the case of Malchus, which is less chomer, then you would certainly suffice with 3 judges. But the Gemara here apparently is working with the opposite assumption, that which is more chomer, which perhaps is our intuitive knee-jerk response, which is more chomer, Malchus or Misa? I'm sorry, Malchus or Mammon?
Malchus
is more chomer. It's a physical corporeal punishment. And add to boot the fact that who knows where it'll end up. You know, you start with Malchus, you never know what might happen down the line. So how do you know that the Torah relies on the judgment of 3 judges? Amar Afuna Makra. The Pasuk says, Ushfatum. So I'm going to move a little bit fast here because this is just a chazor of what we did yesterday, but I want, if anyone wasn't here yesterday, I wanted just to be more or less up to date without all the nitty-gritty details. But the plural form of the word Shfatum, they shall judge, indicates there has to be how many judges? Minimum.
Two.
And then we have a principle called Ein Bezdin Shakul. We never accept a Bezdin if they're on an even number, because we don't have Achri Rabim Lahatis. Again, it could be a unanimous decision, but the Bezdin has to be made up in such a way that it lends itself to a rove, to a majority rule. So therefore we need an odd number of judges on the court. That's called a Bezdin Nota. Therefore, Mosifinot Echad, Harikan Shlosha, fine. So the Gemara says, but now you have to justify another 2 words in the same parasha, both of which are describing the judges in plural, because if you have another 2 plural judges, then you're going to have to jack it up by another 2 and another 2, and then you're going to end up with 2, 2, 2, that's 6, and then you have to add a 7th in order to be a bez nota. So maybe we should assume, according to your logic, Rav Huna, that there should be a Bezdin made up of 7 judges, unless we can justify the plural form of 2 of those words. Those words are Vitzdiku and Vihirshiu. Vitzdiku, and they, meaning the judges, shall find someone, let's say, guiltless, or call him a tzaddik, in other words, he's not guilty of any crime or any sort of accusation. And Vershivas HaRosh, and they have to make sure that person who's evil and is really chayav, that he should be determined to be liable. And we need those two words for a different limud. And that's the limud of Ula, which is remez li'edim zomim in ator minayin, that this parsha of Vitzdiku es atzadik v'shias arosha is referring to edim zomim, meaning that the judges have to establish that the first pair of edim who accused a tzaddik of being a rasha, right? They falsely, because they perjured themselves. Those two edim have to be invalidated, right? Their testimony has to be rejected. How do we do so? Through the process of what? Rabbo said, basically, there's only one way that you could establish beyond the shadow of a doubt that two witnesses have perjured themselves. And what's that?
Zomimin.
Truth is, I went a little too far. I remember that once, you know, my Rebbe Shia, he was taking the attendance. It's unbelievable. We had like 100 guys in the class, but every morning he would take the attendance. And he got to the name Schwartz. And Schwartz wasn't there, so Rav Soloveitchik writes an X on his page, you know. And then by the time he got to the end, to Zuber, I think was his name at the end, and then all of a sudden Schwartz comes in, he says, Rebbe, I'm here. So Rav Soloveitchik goes, Baharug Baraglov. What's Baharug Baraglov? It's a sugya later on where two witnesses testify that Reuven killed Shimon, and then Shimon shows up in Bezdin alive and well. But generally speaking, we cannot use edus to undermine the trustability, so to speak, the credibility of edim, unless it's through hazama. And the Gemara wants to establish that when it says v'tzdiku es atzadik v'shius harasha, it must be referring to edim zomimim, meaning that the Beis Din had a second pair of edim, the mazimim, and based on the second pair of edim, they established that the first pair of edim was zomimim. How do we know that? Because this cannot be a monetary case. The next pasuk says, "V'pilah shofet v'kol lefanav." So we're talking about malchus, and in a monetary case, there's no malchus. So we must be talking about a case of someone who's being accused of a crime, and if there were edim and asro, we'll have to give him malchus, and that's why the Torah says, "V'pilah shofet," etc. So then, why is it v'tzdiku es atzadik v'shias harasha? How could it be that if somebody is being accused of a crime, then one of two things could happen? Either v'tzdiku es atzadik, we'll find them guiltless, everyone's considered innocent until proven guilty, or v'shias harasha, we'll find them guilty as accused. But what's the combination here of v'tzdiku es atzadik v'shias harasha? And the only way we could come up with some sort of, if I can call it a modus vivendi, some sort of workable understanding of this pasuk, is only if we assume we're talking about Azama. How does it work in the case of Azama? It works like this, that the first pair of Edom come in, and they testify about a certain person who is a tzaddik. They testify falsely that he's a rasha. Now we have the second pair of Edim, who are Mazim. They say, Manu Ayisim, to the first pair of Edim. What's going to happen now when we accept the Mazimim and we determine that the first pair of Edim is Zom? Two things are going to happen. Number one, Vitzdiku es Atzadik, that's called in the Gemara's language Meikara. In other words, the person who really was a tzaddik from the get-go but was falsely accused by the first pair of Edim Zomim of being a Rasha. Now with Vitzdiku es Atzadik, we're going to determine and establish that he's really a tzaddik. But the Shias HaRasha, who's now going to become a Rasha? The Edim Zomimim, right? Because the Mazimim, we're going to say, Imanu Ayisim, we're going to establish that the first pair of Edim, the Zomimim, are Rishayim. And then the Torah says that in such a case, what's going to be the final outcome? What's going to be the ruling, the psak of the Beis Din? It's going to be, as the pasuk says, v'pilo ashofet v'hiko lefanov, it's going to be malchus. So it means that for edim zomimim you get malchus. Now wait a second. If the edim zomimim testified against Reuven that he was chai of malchus for eating chazer or for wearing shatnes, then for sure we have a pasuk v'asisalo kasher zomim las. I don't need a pasuk to tell me that Beis Din is going to mete out to these edim zomimim the punishment of malchus. That's obvious because that's kasher zomam. So it must be a case where we couldn't apply kasher zomam, and therefore the Torah is telling me that in the absence of kasher zomam, in the literal sense, then we're going to only have one other fallback position, and that option is what?
Malkus.
Who remembers the case that we mentioned yesterday where we cannot fulfill the pasuk of Yasisim lo kasher zomam literally, and due to the Eidim, what they wanted to do to the Nidon? Ben Grushim and Chalutza. When two Eidim testify against the Kohen that he's a Cholol, that he's Pasul Kahuna, what do we do with these two Eidim? Them if they turn out to be Zomimim? We can't make them into a Cholol, they're not even Kohanim. And the Gemara says, well, what if they are Kohanim? So the Gemara, interesting, the Gemara says that even if they're Kohanim, we cannot make them into Chalolim. And the reason for that is because the Torah says, Lo, Velo Lazaro. Now it's interesting, I don't know if you know this, but if a Kohen is a Cholol, then unfortunately, this is one of the halachic tragedies of the halachic life. The child of this Kohen is also a cholol, and his child is going to be a cholol. So cholol is something that's passed on through the generations, because it's a hafkas kedushas kahuna. And the Torah says, vasisim lo, due to the Eidim, what they wanted to do, but not to their children. And if you can apply the principle of kasher zomam literally and make the Kohanim, if the Eidim happen to be Kohanim, into Chalolim, then you're going to impact on their children. So therefore the Gemara says that that's not an option. We cannot make the Eidim, even if they are Kohanim, into Chalolim. So what punishment do we mete out to them? And here's where our parsha comes in. V'pilo ha-shofet v'kol lefanav, that in this case of itzdikos ha-tzadik v'shios ha-rosha, which is Eidim Zomimim, we're going to mete out Malkus to the Eidim. And this is where we got up to yesterday. V'tepukle, the Gemara is bothered by the following. Why do you need a parsha to teach you that the Eidim Zomimim, in a case where we cannot apply kasher zomam, will get Malkus? V'tepukle. Tepukle means I don't need a pasuk for that. I know it in any event. You know, it's interesting that the word v'tepuk in Aramaic literally means to take it out. When something goes out, it's nafak. Anything that goes out is nafak. In modern Hebrew, we'd say yotza. And what we're saying here, go out, meaning you can derive something. When you take something out of something else, that's called the tepukle. So why do you have to take it out of this pasuk and this drasha of ula, of itzdikos atzadik v'shias ha-rasha? Tepukle, I can take it out of another pasuk. Now, in order to appreciate what the Gemara has in mind here, we have to mention a parsha which is called Lo Sachsam Shar B'disho. What does that mean? Lo Sachsam Shar B'disho? What are you enjoined from?
Muzzling your ox.
From muzzling your ox when you're working with the ox. In other words, if you're working with your animal in a place where the animal wants to eat, because there's plenty of food around in the field, then you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. And if you go ahead and you plow or whatever you do with this animal, and you muzzle the animal, then you violate a law. And the Gemara establishes later on in Masechta Sanhedrin and also in the beginning of Masechta Makis that the paradigm case of Malkus is Lo Sachsom Shar B'disho. And that principle, I'm just going to write it on the board because it's going to come up over and over again. I just need to find. Oh, thank you so much. This is called Dumya Delav de Chasima. You might want to write it down if you happen to have a notebook and you like to write things down. It's Kedai, it's worthwhile. This is called Dumya Delav de Chasima. So the Torah says Lo Tachsom Shor B'disho, and that becomes your paradigm for Malkus. Any case of any lav in the Torah, if you question whether there is Malkus or not, any such issue is based on whether it's dubia, whether it's similar to the lav of Chasima. Okay, so that's a Gemara Malkus on Daf Yud Gimel, and you can look that up in your spare time. We don't have time to go through that sugya now, so we're just going to accept it on face value. Now, there's another principle that we have to keep in mind. And that is that when the Torah speaks about Makis, and this is at the end of the Chumash. And again, if you want to make a note of it, it's in Dvarim Perkhov Ches. It says, Im lo tishmar lasos es kol divrei haTorah hazos. If you do not observe the doing of this Torah, in other words, the actions of the Torah. Now, lo tishmar lasos means the opposite, that you violated the observance of lasos es kol divrei haTorah hazos. And then the Torah mentions makosecha. Makoscha, and that is a reference to Malkus. So we put these two together. We have the Losachsam Shar B'disho, which is in Parashas Ki Teitze, and we have the Parasha of Imlo Tishmar Lasos, and we put them together. What we decide is that whenever you violate a law in the Torah, you're Chayav Malkus. So for example, if the Torah specifies a particular punishment and says Mos Yumas, then that's the punishment you'll get. But if the Torah doesn't tell you what punishment you get for violating a law, the Torah is very, shall I say, open-ended or ambiguous. So in that case, we plug in Malkus, because the Torah says in Lo Tishmar Lasos, it's called Diriyat Torah Sos, and then the Torah says Makosecho, which means we give you Malkus. But the Torah adds the word Lasos, Lo Tishmar. It could have said in Lo Tishmar Es HaTorah, Es Diriyat Torah Sos. Instead it says in Lo Tishmar Lasos. The Lasos is going to tell me something important. And the Gemara is going to say that this Lasos is going to tell me that it's got to be Dumya Delav Dechasima, which means the following. Now, I can ask you the following question. Why is he Chayev in the case of Lav Dechasima? What exactly is the violation? So you can answer this question in one of two ways. You can either say it's the act of Chasima, no, it's the very fact that he muzzles the animal, or it could be the act of working with the animal, of the disha. Disha means, right, the threshing and preparing the land. You know, so you need an animal to do the threshing, and that's called disha. Disha. Now, there are two ways of defining it. And I'm going to ask you, which one do you prefer? We'll take a vote on it, because we're in a democratic country here, right? So it's either that the chasima itself is the action, when you muzzle the animal, or it's the working with the animal that's muzzled. Which one would you say is the violation? The working of the animal. Why? Because at the moment that you muzzle the animal, nothing happened. The Torah doesn't say, do not muzzle your animal. The Torah says, bidisho, when you're working the animal. And by the way, this pasuk of Bidisha, if we assume that the violation here which generates Malkus is the Disha, has tremendous implications in Halacha, way beyond the confines of this discussion about muzzling an animal. For example, the Chazon Ish has a tshuva about a person who rides a tractor, and that tractor does any one of the agricultural malachas. He's only turning on the engine. Would he be chayav for that? For violating the Shabbos? In Shabbos we have a principle called grama, that if you cause a malacha to happen, then you're not chayav. Again, it might be also in Rabbanon, but it's not a doraisa. You're familiar with this. I mean, today they have all sorts of elevators and cars and who knows what, you know, that work with the grama principle, that it's an indirect. So the question is, if I turn on a machine... Right, when I was a kid, they used to call that automation. You remember that? They used to have debates about automation, you know, because it replaces human beings and it puts people out of jobs. Right, this is when I was a child, this was the big debate, you know, the ethics of automation. They say about Rav Aaron Cutler, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, that when he was in a car and one of his students was driving him, and they got to the tolls, you know, where you pay the tolls, and there were two options. He could either throw a coin into a machine or he could pay a worker who was standing there. He would tell the student, make sure to go and pay the worker, because that's kavod ha'adam, that's a dignity. Because if you choose to throw the quarter into the quarter, I don't think there are any tolls left for a quarter. Oh yeah, down in Florida actually there still, I think, is one toll that's a quarter. But anyway, so he says that's an insult to a human being because he chose the automation. So the question of the Chazon Ish is, when I violate Shabbos, but I didn't do anything. It's just that I activated a machine. Am I chayav for that? And the Chazon Ish derives it from this parasha of Disho, that the Torah considers that if you did a maisa by working the animal, even though all you're doing is you're sitting on the animal or you're giving him a smack, you know, but if you cause the animal to work, then it's as if you did that work. So in the case of Saksam Shobadisho, you're working the animal and the animal is muzzled. Says the Gemara in Makis Daf Yud Gimel, from this I'm going to derive that it's only lasos, that when do you get malchus, that's only a lav that fits the following description. It's a lav that has lasos in it, like the case of working the animal, because the working the animal is as if you are doing the work and the animal is muzzled, and you're chayv malchus for that act of lasos, of working the animal. So the Gemara now is going to vacillate back and forth on the following issue. If we didn't have Ula's super duper drasha to teach me that in a case where you cannot fulfill kashrus zomim literally, like the case of Ben Grusha and Chalutza, that we give the Eidim Malkus, what would we do in the absence of that drasha of Ula? Would we give a Malkus simply because he violates a lav? Which lav does he violate, everybody? Lo tale, no tale, you have to know this by heart. It's in the Aser Sedivis. Lo sana bariacha eid shakar. You're not allowed to testify and falsify your testimony. So the Eidim Zomim clearly violated that lav. So the Gemara says, Tepuklei, why do you have to go through this whole complicated drasha of Ula? Let's just derive it from Losana Bereacha Eid Shoker. And the Gemara answers, Mishum Davi Lav She'ein Bo Maisa. That this violation of Losana is a lav without a Maisa. V'chol Lav She'ein Bo Maisa Ein Lokin Olav. That since the Torah says in Los Ishmar Lasos, and that is the pasuk, the paradigm pasuk for Malkus, then lasos means it's a lav sheyeshbo masa. And Rashi in Masechta Malkus, and he hints at it here also in the Dira Maskel Lav, which is about the second of the wide lines, he says in Lo Tishmar Lasos, and then it says Vehifla Shemis Makosko Me, etc. And that's considered a chi of malchus because of lasos, because of the asiya. And although Rashi quotes the Gemara in Malkus, you'll see on Daf Yud Gimel, you see that? On the third line down it says Malkus Daf Yud Gimel, but the Gemara there really, really comes to a different conclusion, that the reason why you don't get malchus for lav shein bo mais is because it's not dumya de lo saksam shar bedisho, where you're working the animal and that's considered your maisa. And basically, the one of the Rishonim here, that's the Yad Ramah, who's one of the great Rishonim on Masechet Sanhedrin, he claims that Rashi apparently understood that even in the Maskonas HaGemara, we still need a Pasuk Lasos, because we're not 100% sure if Lo Saksam Shor B'Disho is a full-fledged Lav Sheyesh Bo Masa. But I want you to take a look for a moment at this Tosis Dira Maskel V'Chol. And he mentions the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Our sugya completely ignores the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds in Masechta Makis and in other Masechtas in Shas, in Tmura and elsewhere, he holds a lav she'ein bo maisa lokin olav. And Rabbi Yehuda rejects this whole limud of lasos and dumya de lav de chasima, and even if you violate a lav be passivity, right? Beshevi alta said, without a mice, you still get malchus for it. And he has many examples. Makalel and Motzi Shemra is only a dibur, it's not a mice. What else? Megadev, you know, Shvua. There are many different cases where a person gets malchus even though he didn't do a maisa. And the Rebbe Yehuda holds that proves the rule rather than the exception. So the Chachom say each case is a little bit exceptional, and the rule is you don't get malchus without what? Without a maisa. But our Gemara is completely oblivious to Rebbe Yehuda. And basically, according to Rebbe Yehuda, since you would get malchus for a lav shein bo maisa, then presumably, in the case of Eidim Zomimim, since they violated the lav lo sana v'reachet shaker, they should get malchus. I don't need Ula's derivation because I know it from the fact that he violates Losana. So what are you going to tell me? But Losana is Dibur and it's not a Maisa. So what? Rabbi Yehuda holds that you get Malkus even for Lav Shembo Maisa. So Tosis answers this, that he wants to reconcile Asugya even with Rabbi Yehuda. And even Rabbi Yehuda needs the Pasuk and the drush of Ula from the Hoya in Bin Hakos HaRosha. And he says the following, Me'achash Mikan Lomid Rabbi Yehuda is Dino. That Mikemet Shechid Shetor Sheish Malkus B'Lav Shal Osana, Af Al Gav Dehu Lav Shem Bo Maisa, and then that becomes a paradigm, what's called a Binyan Av, for all cases of a Lav Shem Bo Maisa. So if you didn't have the Pasuk of Hayim Ben Akos HaRosha, we would not know this din of Rabbi Yehuda that you get Malkus for a Lav Shem Bo Maisa. So again, just to summarize, the Gemara, and of course we're now going to enter the second part of our sugya for today, the Gemara establishes that Vitzdiko as a tzaddik v'shias a rasha is a necessary pasuk, and therefore we're not going to use it to jack up the number of judges that sit on the case of Malkus, and it's justified and it's necessary for Edim Zomimim. The question that you might ask is, why do I need a drasha for Edim Zomimim in any event they violate the Lavalosana? And there are two answers to that question. The Chachamim will answer because you wouldn't get Malkus for a Lav of Losana because it's a Lav She'enbo Maisa. And Rabbi Yehuda would give the answer that I need the pasuk of Virshiu as a rush, etc., to teach me that Edom Zomim, despite the fact that there was no Maisa, they still get Malkus, and that becomes the paradigm for any Lav She'ein Bo Maisa, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you get Malkus. The Gemara says now, the Mishnah, Mishum Rabbi Yishmol Amru B'Yesmer V'Shlosha, we need 23 judges. And we just finished saying that the Torah says Ushvatum. And Shvatum means two judges. We added a third judge to make it into a Bez Denote. Is my time of the Rabbi Yehuda? Why doesn't Rabbi Yishmael buy in to this drasha? Did he have some other drasha that undermined the original drasha of Shvatum, of Rabbi Meir? And the second drasha will now establish that in the case of Malkus, you need a Bezdin of 23 judges. So again, the Maitaimed Rabbi Yehuda is based on the fact that we've already, you know, we found a very strong foundation for Rabbi Meir in the Pasuk Ushvatum, and therefore Rabbi Yishmael must have had some sort of counter drasha which undermines the original drasha of Rabbi Meir Ushvatum. Or Abaye is a Gzeirah Shava. Now Tosis points out that the Gzeirah Shava we're about to learn is quoted in many different places in Shas, and we derive many different conclusions from this Gzeirah Shava. Now this Gzeirah Shava is going to equate two types of punishments, and both are corporeal. One is Misa, when we put the criminal to death, and the other is Malkus. And we're going to equate the two. And how is that derived? Gzeirah Shava, Rasha, Rasha. Twice in the Torah, in two different contexts, the Torah uses the word Rasha. In Chayvei Mises, Ksiv, it says, V'hoya im ben hakos ha-rosh. Oh no, I'm sorry. In Malkus, it says, V'hoya im ben hakos ha-rosh. So you see that we're giving Malkus to whom? How does the Torah describe this person who's getting Malkus, everybody? A-rosh. Ksiv ha-sam. And in Chayvei Mises, Bezdin, this you'll see in Bamidbar Lamed Hey. Okay, that's a parsha that's very familiar to us. Asher hu rasha lamus. And again, the Torah uses the word when we're putting someone to death, describing as what? Everybody, a Rasha. So we have two Rashas. We have the Rasha of Malkus, in Haya bin Akos a Rasha. We have the Rasha of Asheru Rasha Lamus, in the case of someone who's condemned to death. And that gives us a Gzeirah Shava. What's the import of this Gzeirah Shava? Says Abaye, Malahal, and just like in the case of Chayvei Mises Bezdin, is Esrim Vishloshi, you need a Bezdin of what? Of 23 judges, not less. Afkan so too in Chayvei Malkus, we need to judge them be Esrim Vishloshi with 23 judges. Now, to our surprise, Rava comes up with a Svara. Now, Tosis wants to know whether Rava is rejecting this Gzeirah Shava. Take a look at Tosdir Maskel Rava, Mashman, the less like Zereshavah, the Rasha. So b'makom achim mefura, she says later on, I'm going to explain this to you, that this can't be. Meaning, there's no way that Rava could reject this gzeres shava. This gzeres shava is well founded, and it's established, and many, many different halachas are going to be derived from this gzeres shava. It cannot be, says Tosfos, that Rava rejects the gzeres shava. So basically, what we're going to have here in Rava is more of a, I call it a conceptual statement, meaning that even if he didn't have the Gzeres Shava, this particular halacha could have been derived logically. The requirement of the 23 judges is not dependent upon the Gzeres Shava. Even, shall we say, regardless of the Gzeres Shava, we would still derive the conclusion that you require 23 judges. Okay? Now, how would Rabbi Shmuel derive 23 judges without the Gzeres Shava? Malkus b'makom misa omedes. So we'll translate the words of the Gemara and then we'll try to interpret them. That the Malkus is a replacement for misa. So on this phrase, this statement of Rav, we have three different approaches. We have Rashi and two different possible approaches that are offered by Tosfos. And what I'm going to ask you to do is, I want you to be the judges here. I don't know if we have 23, but, and you be, or the jury, right? And you decide which of the three approaches you like best. But you can't just say, I like it best. You have to sort of prove to me that that approach is the best approach. So let's start with Rashi. Rashi says the following, an unbelievable, unbelievable principle. This is three lines down in the wide lines. Kevan di avar al azharas bar'o. What does bar'o mean? His creator. He violated the will of his creator. Raihu, what's the next word? Lamus. This is unbelievable. Rashi is saying that when a person violates the will of God, and we're talking about one avera, he forfeits his right to live. He's royal lamos. And this is the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says, "Hanefesh achotas tomus," that when a person sins, he deserves to die. Any time that he lives, even after he violated the will of God, that's just divine compassion. But according to strict din, he should die. Umisa zu kanas olav hakosuf, and the Torah imposes this penalty of misa on a person who violates the law. And in this case, the Torah says, instead of giving you misa, we're going to find something to replace misa. For example, how many different misos bezins do we have?
Four.
Now we're adding a fifth, and that's what? Malchus. Malchus is a fifth way of putting the criminal to death. Is he going to die? Well, I'm going to say something and don't hold me at fault. Hopefully he'll die. What does that mean, hopefully he'll die? Do I wish someone to die? But in terms of strict justice, we really hope that he'll die, because Rashi says that this is a fifth form of putting him to death. If he happens to survive, he lucked out. You know, he had a lucky day. But really, he deserves to die. That's Rashi's approach. So you'll have to determine, after you see two other approaches, whether you like Rashi's approach. Tosfos, Malchus tachas misa omedes. Now he has a slightly different girsa than we have. Our text is Malchus bimkom misa omedes. He has tachas misa omedes. Yesh mefarshim. Now watch this, put on your seatbelts for this one. Mishum de b'nei Noach as a rosam zuhi misasan. Vinitenes li Yisrael malchus as a rosam tachas misa de b'nei Noach. I mean, I have to tell you, Rabbi Osai, in a million years I never would have come up with this piece of logic. I still to this day don't know where Tosfos got this from. He must have seen this somewhere. Because it's mamish from left field. It's like from nowhere. Tosfos says that we should compare a member of the Jewish nation to the members of the other nations of the world. That's called B'nai Noah. Well, what's the deal with Bnei Noach? First of all, how many mitzvahs do they have?
Seven.
What's the punishment for Ben Noach if he violates any of the seven mitzvahs?
Misa.
As a rosam zui misasa, meaning when the Torah prohibits and enjoins Ben Noach from X, whatever it is, any of the seven, the Torah is telling you, I warn you, that if you violate the will of God, and you violate one of the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach, you will be killed. And that's the halacha. Again, if we ever have a Beis Din, you know, that has free hand over Bnei Noach. You know, imagine the following case. Christopher grabs a leg of a live bird and eats it. Okay? He's going to be put to death for that. It goes even further, by the way. This is scary. I don't want to say this out loud because I think this machine might or may not. I don't know if it's on. I can't tell because it doesn't tell you. But anyway, what if a doctor performs an abortion? A non-Jewish doctor. Quite possible he's Chayv Misa in a Beis Din Shel Yisrael. Because there's no difference between a fetus and a live, viable being after birth as far as Bnei Noach is concerned. So anyway, I'm just telling you, this has far reach. Now again, the way I was always brought up, that's a different system of law. That's called what? Bnei Noach. Has no impact on Klal Yisrael. The Tos says no. It's a halachic principle that applies to Klal Yisrael. The only thing is that in the case of Klal Yisrael, as a replacement for Misa, we're gonna give Malkus, but it's really Misa. He's Chayav Misa. Why is he Chayav Misa? Because of Ben Noach would be Chayav Misa. So the Torah says in Yisrael, Yochiv Misa expresses itself in Malkus. It's not a new entity. You know, you and I would say that Malkus is a whole new entity. No. It's really the Misa. It's the Misa that, it's almost as if every Jew is also, well, this is true, every Jew is a Ben Noach. But what it means is that to some extent, insofar as the fact that every Jew is a Ben Noach, he's a descendant of Noach, the law and the punishment that applies to Ben Noach applies to a Jew as well. Now the Torah is Mechadish, you know what? We're gonna let him get away with Malkus. But the Malkus is that Misa which applies to Ben Noach. The Od Yeh Shlomo, and here's the third possibility. Mishum the Zimnin Mesim Al Yedei Malkus. That it's quite possible on occasion that the person will die as a result of Malkus. That if the Shliach Beis Din meets out 39 Malkus, and guess what? The Loka died, then the Shliach Beis Din is not Chayev. He's not even Chayev Golus. It's not even considered a Rotzeach B'Shogeg. Again, if he adds a 40th, then he goes to the Ermiklat, if he didn't do it intentionally, obviously. So I want you to cover the last three lines, if anyone's able to do that, because that's my question for you. Which of the three, let's go over the three interpretations of Malkus, either Malkus Tachas Miso Meneso, or as we have it in Agius, Bimko Miso Menes, which of the three is the best of the three? So let's go over the three.
Isn't Rashi the same as the first one?
No, not at all. Rashi is saying that really he deserves to die. He deserves to die because of the principle that someone who violates the will of the Torah deserves to die. Will he die? Maybe he'll die. Will we be happy if he dies? As strange as it sounds, the answer is yes. Why? Because he deserves to die. He has luck, he lucks out, and he didn't die. So we'll let him live. You know, we don't have to kill him a second time. But really, we have to kill him. Rashi says this is another one of the various Misos Beis Din. And that's Rashi's Pshat. The Yesh Mefarsh in the first Pshat in Tosfos is no. We're going to treat him as a Ben Noach. But the Torah is going to say that just like in Ben Noach, Hazarosan he zui misasam, in Yisrael, Hazarosan zui malkusam. That the punishment for Yisrael is going to be Malkus. Not the way Rashi says. Rashi says that what's the punishment for Yisrael? Misa. If he lucks out and he survives it, you know, it was his lucky day. Tosis is saying no, that the punishment for Yisrael is going to be a different punishment. That's going to replace the punishment as a Ben Noach. He now has a new status. He's a Ben Yisrael. And therefore he's going to get what? He's going to get a different punishment. His Asar is going to be an Asar for Malkus. And the third pshat is that simply physically, he doesn't deserve to die, but he may die. So by ruling against him that he's guilty as accused, and therefore he has to suffer 39 lashes, there is a possibility that he'll die. You'll tell me, no, there's no possibility that he'll die. Right, we're going to call in a team of experts. We're going to estimate it at how much he can take, and so forth. So no, Tosa says the Gemara itself in Masechet Makis discusses a case where the he died. He actually died as a result of the Malkus. Question is whether the Shliach Bezdin who meted out the Malkus is chayav Golos, and the answer is he's not chayav Golos because he's doing his job. You know, due diligence, they went through the whole thing and they decided he could take 39, and lo and behold, he died. So which of these three pshatim are correct? So we're going to read one more line in the Gemara, and then the ball is in your court. If Rava is correct, and the reason why we require 23 judges is because of the principle, the logic of Malkus Bimko Miso Medes, is Umdena Lamali. We have a Mishnah in Masechta Makis, and the Mishnah says that before we mete out the punishment of Malkus, we need an Umdena, and we have to decide how much he can take, and maybe this guy is a little bit weaker than someone else, and therefore when you give him the lashes, what's called flagellations, whatever the word is, he'll die if you don't do this umdana because maybe he's weak. This is Rav Acha Bereid, the Rav's kasha to Rav Ashi. Limche, beat him up. Limche means talkeoto. The mois lemus. And if he dies, let him die. Whose pshat is that, Rabosai? It's Rashi's pshat. This is no doubt Rashi's pshat. Rashi says he deserves to die if he had a lucky day and somehow he survived 39 Malkus. Okay, you know, he lucked out. But if he dies, I don't have him. We should be clapping our hands and championing the justice, because justice requires that he dies. According to Tosus's first pshat, the Torah says in regard to Yisrael, as a rasim zuyu malkosam, that whereas a guy would get misa, the Torah replaces that in the case of Yisrael and he gets malkus. We don't want him to die. And according to the next pshat of Tosus, Adarav, the whole reason why we need 23 judges, according to Rabbi's explanation, Rabbi Shmuel, is because heaven forbid he might die. And that's the last thing in the world we want. So if you take a look at the last three lines in Tosus, which I asked you to cover before, just as a pedagogical approach, he says, V'kasha l'shnei pirushim alalu, according to these two interpretations that I just presented, my part of what is Gemara asking, Yachi umdana lamali, why do we need umdana to make sure he doesn't die? Let him die. The Gemara says, let him die. Upirish hakuchus ikar. Rabosa, that's pretty rare. That Tosis would offer two alternative shot to Rashi pshat, and then at the end of the day sign off that Rashi is the ikar. Rashi is the right. Is the right pshat. But I think what's happening in this Tosis is that conceptually, Tosis has a problem with Rashi, but textually, the Gemara seems to bear out Rashi. And as I mentioned to you before, the Yerushalmi in fact says that they asked different bodies of scholars until if they finally asked the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, what do we do with the Nefesh HaChotas? What's the punishment for someone who sins? And the Nevi'im say Tomus, that he should die. So there is support for Rashi in Shas, but this Gemara here seems to be the greatest support for Rashi. But you know what? This is the question that Rav Acha posed to Rav Ashi. But you know, the story doesn't end here, because Rav Ashi responds to Rav Acha. Now let's analyze the response of Rav Ashi to Rav Acha, and we'll see if maybe we can now resurrect from the dead these two pshatim in Rashi. Because maybe Enochinami, Rav Acha, when he asked this question, he understood Rava the way Rashi understood Rava, and he deserves to die, so who cares if he dies? We don't need Umdana. But Amar Le, Rav Ashi says, Amar Kra, the Torah says, V'nikla achicha Le'einecha, in the parsha of Malkus, of Vehipilo, Ashofevi, Kolofonov, it says, V'nikla achicha le'einecha. Nikla means he'll be booshed out, he'll be humiliated. But the Torah adds the word achicha. Now here we have to take a pause. Whenever you see the word achicha in Torah Shebichsav, in Torah Shebal Peh, we interpret it as achicha b'Torah u'b'mitzvahs, that he is part of the Jewish community that accepts and is committed to Torah u'mitzvahs. Now this is very strange, because v'nikla means we have to beat him up, right? We can give him 39 malchus. Why? Was he an upstanding citizen? Did he behave properly and implement the law of the Torah? No. We're giving him malchus because he violated the law of the Torah. How could the Torah then go ahead and call him achicha? And the answer is, says the drasha of Rav Ashi, michi machis agabah, where we hit him over the back, when we give him malchus, is the chaye machis. He's considered achicha. He's alive and well. In other words, the Torah is saying that there's going to be a tremendous transition here before Malkus and after Malkus. Before Malkus, he's called Rasha. And the Torah says in Bin Hakos a Rasha, we have to beat out Malkus to a Rasha. But after he receives the Malkus, then he's called achicha. And we very much want him to live. It would be pointless if he died as a result of the Malkus. That's the last thing in the world we want to do, because the agenda, the accomplishment that we want to achieve here is that he become achicha, that he's reinstated into the Jewish community. And that's why the poskim write that you cannot count this Jew in a minyan because he was a Rasha, he flagrantly and deliberately violated the Torah in front of two witnesses and he got asra. He's out. He's not achicha. But the moment he gets Malkus, we can count him in a minyan, and we can call him up for Shishi. He's part of the Jewish community. Why? How do we reinstate him with Malkus? Because the Torah calls him what? Achicha. So now I ask you the following question. If the whole purpose of this Malkus is to make him into Achicha, do you want him to die or do you want him to survive? Obviously we want him to survive. So don't tell me, Rav Acha, that if he dies, let him die, and we should clap on the side because he died. Right? That's not what we want to do over here. You know, when you're happy that somebody dies, then you clap when he dies, right? Remind me after Shia, if anybody wants to hear a story about my wife when she gave birth to our first baby, and they took her by ambulance to Haaretz Ofim to give birth, and I'll tell you who's clapping, who's very happy. But that's after Shia, if you're interested in that story. I don't know if anyone here is going to remember that I told you that I have a story to tell. But if anybody remembers and they're curious, after the Shia, I'll tell you about clapping when you're happy that somebody died. Yeneva, we're not clapping. Then the Rav Acha says we're clapping. We're happy he died. Why? Because as Rashi says, he deserves to die. Comes along, Rav Ashi says, no, we don't want to kill the guy. On the contrary, we want to keep him alive. The whole purpose is to cleanse him of his sin and reinstate him as achicha. Again, Rav Acha said, what else does he have to do besides getting the 39 malchus?
Tshuva.
Correct, he has to do tshuva. But the combination of tshuva with malchus is a very, very powerful combination, and it changes his status. Instead of being a rush, he becomes a chicha. Now, if you take the maskana of Rav Ashi, based on the pasuk v'nikla chicha leinecha, then you could go back and reinterpret Rava and drop Rashi's interpretation and accept one of the other two interpretations. Either that Malkus is a replacement for Misa, which is appropriate for a Ben Noach, but in the case of a Yisrael, Malkus is going to be the appropriate punishment. And that's what's called Malkus Vemoko Misa Omedes. And since it's a replacement for Misa, it has a certain, shall we say, a certain corporeal and capital shmek to it. You know, a certain, it's like, have you ever heard the phrase Avak Lashon Hara? You know, there's something that's not technically Lashon Hara, but you know what I mean? It smells foul. It's like a vak Lashon Hara. Here also, it's a vak Misa, because had he been a Ben Noach for the same violation, he would have been put to death. So therefore, we require 23 judges. But again, the Malkus is the punishment for Yisrael. And we can take the other interpretation that we need 23 judges because, heaven forbid, he might die. And that's the worst thing in the world, because the Torah says, V'nikla achicha le'einecha. Okay. Elo Hadisanya. Now Rav Ach has another round over here, and he's going to ask Rav Ashi a second question. What do we do with the following brisa? Okay. Now, as you and I know, 39 Malkus, what kind of number is that? Is that odd or even?
Odd.
That's an odd number. And it's very important that the number of Malkus that we give should be an odd number. And not only that, we're going to divide that number by 3. So we need a number that's divisible by 3. So let's say, for example, if they do an umdana and the panel of experts decide that he can only take X amount of malchus, we're only going to be able to mete out that X if that X is divisible by 3. And here's the case of the brisa, umdu lekabel esrim. He can take 20 malchus. 21 malchus is too much for him. The 21st malchus might kill him. So now, the number 20 is not divisible by 3, correct? And what do we do now? So we can't give him 20 malchus. Ein makinoso elamakos haruyos lishtalish. We need a number that can be divisible by 3. Now, are we going to add? You know, we could jump it up and jack it up to 21. 21 is divisible by 3. Right? Or should we lower the number? What would be the next lowest number that would be divisible by 3?
18.
18 is divisible by 3. Correct? So, Kamahain, so how many Malkus, says the Bryson, do we meet at in this case where the maximum number he can tolerate is 20? Tamne Srei, 18. Tamne is 8, and Srei it replaces the number 10. So it means that the maximum number of Malkus we can give in this case is 18 Malkus. In a sense, he got a good deal here, because really, he should be given 20 Malkus, because he can tolerate 20 Malkus. But we can't do it that way. Now, by the way, there's another fraction, another ratio here that comes into the discussion here, and that's the ratio of 2 to 1. What do I mean by 2 to 1? We take that number, which is divisible by 3, and we break it down to 2 to 1. What do I mean by 2 to 1? 2/3 of the malchus are given on his back, and 1/3 of the malchus is given on his front, over his chest. Now, in the case of 18, how do we get a ratio of 2 to 1? How many malchus are we going to give him on the back?
12,
exactly. And how many malchus are we going to give him on the front?
6.
So 12 plus 6 is 18. 18 is a number that's divisible by 3. And we have a ratio of 2 to 1, 2 over his back, in a ratio to 1 in his front, which in this case of 18 would be 12 on his back and 6 on his front. That's what we have. That's what we have so far. And now we're going to turn to Daf Yud Amid Beis. Frek de Gemara. This is Rav Acha's second round in his Kasha on Rav Ashi. Lim Chaye Esrim Vechada. Why don't we give him 21 Malkus? But wait a minute, we just finished saying that how much can he tolerate and survive only 20? So what's Rav Ach all upset about? So he says, V'chi mayis ha-bahach chada lemus. Very strange. This is a repeat performance that we just had. The premise that underlies Rav Ach's thinking is that Misa, that Malkus welcome Misa, means that he really deserves to die. Now, we just finished rejecting that based on the pasuk of Nikla Chicha Leinecha. He doesn't deserve to die. This is one of the strangest gemaras. You know, didn't Rav Acha get the message over here? If you give him the 21st makkah, because 21 is a number divisible by 3, fine, let him die. Because when you're giving him the malchus on his back, you know, that was okay. And if he dies, he dies. So what's going on over here? This is very, very strange. So let me suggest the following. We'll see if I can read this into Rashi. What I think is going on is the following. That Rav Acha either misunderstood the answer of Rav Ashi, and I'll explain why and how, or he had a different interpretation of what Rav Ashi had the right to derive from this pasuk. The Torah says, "V'nikla achicha le'einecha." That means that he's got to be achicha, and he's got to be alive at the time that you give the malchus. It doesn't prove that after the Malkus he's still alive. So again, going back to Rav Acha, the way Rashi interpreted Rava, if Rav Acha understood Rava the way Rashi interpreted Rava, that the sinner deserves to die, there's no problem if he dies. The real problem is V'nikla chichalei necha, that the Torah says he's alive. Comes along Rav Acha and he says, okay, he's got to be alive. Well, he was alive at the time that we gave him the Malkus. And if he was alive at the time that we gave him Malkus, we fulfilled the pasuk of Nikla Achicha. Even if he dies afterwards, well, Mikra Din, according to the law, he deserves to die. So if if my take on this is correct, then what we're going to have now is not a repeat performance, but the Rav Ashi is going to have to go back to the pasuk V'nikla Achicha Le'necha, and he's going to have to reinterpret it. So let's go back to the first interpretation on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. There it says V'nikla Achicha Le'necha Dechimachis Agaba, when you hit him over the back, Chai Machis, a live person you hit. And what that means is that you have to be Mekayim the Malkus while he's alive. Comes along Rav Ach and he says the following. He can only take 21, he can only take 20 malchus, right? What does that mean? Let me give you two possibilities. Does that mean that when you hit him the 21st time, he dies? Or does that mean that he will die in the future as a result of the 21st malchus? Do you hear the difference between the two? So again, how do we understand the Umdin? When the Umdin says he can't take more than 20, it means that when you give him the 21st malchus, he drops dead? Or does it mean that 21st makkah is gonna eventually cause his death? And the nafkamina is going to be the way that we interpret the drush of Rav Ashi in round number one, back on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. If Rav Ashi understood V'nikla al-Achicha Beinecha means that he has to be alive at the moment that you hit him over the back, then says Rav Acha, even if they assessed him at 20 max and not 21, he will be alive at the time that you hit him the 21st. It's not going to be a simultaneous death. The very moment that you give him the 21st makkah, he dies. Amalei, so now Rav Ashi goes back to the scoreboard and he comes and reinterprets the drasha. Amar Kra, again, we want to compare these words to the words of Rav Ashi in round one on Amud Aleph. It says, V'nikla achicha le'necha, achar shaloka achicha be'ina v'leka. It's not the way that I gave you the impression on the first round, d'chimachis agabah d'chayimachis, that he's alive at the time of the makkah. No. It means achar shaloka. Achicha. Now, the word achicha is describing, as we discussed earlier, his status or his situation after the makkah. And what's going to happen is that if you give him the 21st makkah, he will not remain alive. Maybe he'll survive a few minutes or a few hours, I don't know how long, but eventually he's going to die as a result of the 21st makkah. And the Torah now is saying, V'nikla achicha le'necha li'achar shaloka, even after he gets hit, is achicha, he has to be alive. And that's lekka, and that's impossible. Okay, Rabosai, we're going to stop here. Now, I want to ask you the following question. We're up to Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha, yeah? Mm-hmm. In order to make heads or tails out of this sugya of Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha, we have to go through an extensive introduction, which I have here in front of me, which I'd like to give out for anyone who wants a copy. But I need someone to volunteer photocopying this. Just by a show of hands, how many people would be interested in an introduction to the next sugya? So we need three copies. Well, wait, how many copies do we need? One, two, We need six copies. Do we have a volunteer to make six copies of this introduction? Don't all answer once. I can't take too many.
This page.
This page here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you don't mind?
No.
Okay, great. So photocopy this page, because without this introduction, I'm afraid we'll be lost. If you could make six copies, six people would like a copy. And you know what? Make one extra copy that I'll take for myself, because that Gemara doesn't belong to me. This way I can make a different one.
Can I ask an overwhelming question from the